Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Russians don't bluff, they act. With the induction of four Ukrainian regions into Russia, it should be clear to all, Moscow is determined to achieve all the goals it set out at the start of this conflict. In the meantime, the West is in a panic. Their panic is irrational and dangerous. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, Martin J. in Marrakesh. He's an award-winning journalist and commentator. And in Budapest, we have George Samueli. He is a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, start out with George in Budapest. George, I'm titling this program Political Facts. And over the last few days, some political facts have made themselves loud and clear. First, we have the sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines. It's pretty obvious who did it. I don't want to dwell on it, but we have to dwell on the fact that it is no longer going to be of any practical use for keeping Europe warm and keep its industry moving through this winter. Also, the second important political fact were the outcomes of the referendums that were held in Ukraine and their induction, all but official right now, into Russia. And so here we are, we have a complete break between Europe and Russia in almost every single sense right now. And we have Ukraine going under a massive transformation, which all three of us could have easily predicted and actually, in fact, did. Your thoughts, George?
No, this is a very good introduction. What's really happened now is the disastrous outcome that was entirely predictable once the West embarked on this policy of using Ukraine in order to destroy Russia. Because what has really happened is that Ukraine continues to diminish. So we had the first phase was the loss of Crimea back in 2014. Now we have these four regions that are now lost forever. And so all of this talk that we have heard for these few months from the so-called kind of realist foreign policy thinkers that, well, maybe we could revive Minsk II, we'll have a Minsk III. That's gone. That's not happening anymore. And now, of course, since the West declared, nothing changes. We're going to continue to pour in arms into Ukraine. We're going to go on fighting forever. Well, then that much more of Ukraine is going to be lost. I mean, because we've got this region as well. There's Odessa, Nikolaev. You've got the Black Sea coast. You know, it's just going to be the ever more diminution of Ukraine.
Martin, Joseph Borrell, the foreign policy chief of the EU, he says, Putin makes it more difficult, even impossible, for this war to end. Well, that's really quite interesting. It's because, considering the fact that they're the ones that want to continue it. And I find it really curious for the war to end the way he wants it to end. See, but this is the point. This is the breach. These are the political facts that I'm talking about. You know, you can sham referendums and all of this. It doesn't make any difference on the ground, okay? That's the problem here. And this is what the West has done. Their battle is rhetorics and putting in munitions into Ukraine. That's it. That's their only policy. And they don't have an outcome that is even within the realm of possibilities. Martin.
No, Borrell can't be taken at all seriously. I mean, the man's an utter buffoon. It's a minor miracle how he got the job in the first place. We should remember there's a stitch-up between the European groups in Brussels to always give that post to a socialist from a Mediterranean country. So he was in line for it and he got the job. But he's a joke. This is the same Borrell, don't forget, that when the war kicked off, did not make a beeline to Putin in Moscow. But actually went to Washington and made this rather absurd, banal speech talking about stepping up a Western strength against Russia, talking up a war. Macron went to Moscow. Macron being a more respected Western leader that can actually talk the talk And represent the European Union. So Borrell couldn't even represent the EU. He was so pathetic. He was so weak and ineffective. He had to do his little rant on a stage next to his left-wing socialist buddy, Biden. But I think we've got the thinking wrong, you know, and it's amazing how so much time passes and the EU thinking is we can win this. It's really only a question of time, you know. And we see people like Borrell make these ridiculous statements, you know, but the truth is, I mean, media is also playing a role here, but I think the EU have really got their sums wrong. And when we see such things as the Nord Stream pipelines being blown up, you know, it's amazing, isn't it, how so few people in the West actually just draw breath and ask a few simple questions like, why on earth would Putin blow up his own oil pipeline when he could just switch it off? You know, as he did recently with Italy, you know, I mean, he doesn't need to do the histrionics of planting explosives and doing these, you know, commando run things, which are probably going to make a B or C run movie in Hollywood at some point. You know, so we've lost the plot. We've lost the narrative. You know, there's a certain hopelessness now amongst Western countries, which is partly responsible why you have this, don't laugh, Macron's new plan. For a sort of EU 2.0, where he's gonna sort of muster together 27 member states plus neighbours like UK, Ukraine, and Turkey, to try and actually fast track big decision policy making. And of course, top of that list, they don't call it an EU army, but I can assure you, it is an EU army. He's been on the record. You know, at the beginning of his French presidency last year, he actually said we need an EU army. So this is what's in the pipeline, because the EU actually believes, you know, stop giggling. The EU actually believes that if it had an EU army, if it had soldiers from France, the Benelux, Spain, with little blue armbands on their shoulders, that would actually deter Putin in Ukraine, that it would scare him, that it would push him back, you know. And this is the way they're thinking. They don't understand. Putin. They don't understand how that would just
they did that once. It was under Napoleon, and we know how that ended. Okay. So, George, the Ukrainian President Zelensky has kind of folded his arms and said, I'm not going to talk to Putin anymore. Wow. As if anybody cares, and why would Putin talk to Zelensky in the first place when he can probably call somebody in Washington? George.
Yes. And it's not as though Putin particularly wants to talk to him, since he has openly said the people in charge in Kiev are just simply the puppets of the United States. I mean, they have no decision-making capabilities, which we, of course, know, because when there was supposed to be an agreement signed in Istanbul in March, he was told in no uncertain terms, you are not to sign this agreement. So, yeah, obviously, Zelensky is nobody. What's kind of interesting in all of this is that he then presented, I want fast track application into NATO. And then Stoltenberg came out a few hours later. Well, we need unanimous approval of all of this, because he knows that he's been told by the more sensible members of NATO, no way are we going to sign up on this. And even Jake Sullivan said that, well, we got to think a little bit about this. And Borrell also, that's not really the main issue. So that was that felt like a dud. On the part of Zelensky.
Well, I mean, George, it kind of begs the question. I mean, if Ukraine did miraculously become part of NATO, then NATO and Russia would be in a state of war. I mean, even the very thought of having Ukraine in NATO as at this moment breaks all of the rules of NATO membership. I mean, they blow up pipelines, they change the rules, they change everything in the middle of the game, and then point the finger at the other guy and say, you did this. Martin, reflect upon that. Go ahead.
Yeah, and as a journalist, I must say I'm quite ashamed to be part of the Fourth Estate, which is playing a huge role in all this. You know, I mean, the media really is towing the line on this narrative from the West and this the histrionics of blowing up pipelines and pointing the finger at Putin. You know, I wonder where that's all leading, and you know whether we will actually at some point hold journalists or media organizations to account You know, I mean, the whole question of NATO membership, as George raised, you know, it's hilarious, isn't it? We probably don't realise just how weak the West is when it comes to actually going to war with adversaries. You know, we talk the talk, we've got the military spending. You know, even if Germany spends 100 billion euros and to ramp up its military, you know, and now we're talking about an EU army, we don't have the strength, the courage, the fortitude, you know, and Putin knows that. And this idea of Ukraine joining NATO is just hilarious because, you know, it's just one more PR disaster, I think, for NATO. You know, I mean, journalists can pump out this absolute guff about Nord Stream 1 and 2 being blown up. You know, look at the realities of this, we can call it an act of terrorism. You know, Biden actually went on the record and said, we will stop these pipelines. You know, and his half-wit deputy, Harris, said the same thing. You know, why are journalists not joining up the lines? Because they're told not to. They're told that's not the kind of stories.
Well, Martin, don't you think now that, civilian infrastructure is on the chessboard now, okay?
I mean, but that's the idea. That's the plan.
Yeah, just after the attack, the sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines, a new Baltic pipeline was introduced. So, I don't know. Something could happen to that, I suppose.
Yeah, I think Biden is playing. He's got the midterms coming up, so the timing of this is very interesting. But I think also it's also about business. You know, the American LNG companies are cleaning up, and the idea is that European countries become more and more dependent on America in terms of energy dependency, but also political as well. There is a deficit there, you know, and that deficit may well widen as the months go past when more and more countries start taking a different viewpoint of what we're doing in Ukraine and start asking some difficult questions.
Do you think that there's some kind of relationship, Martin, between the temperature going down and eventually asking some serious questions? Do you think they're somehow related?
It will actually intensify. And I think over the next few weeks, when people really start suffering, I mean, horrendously suffering that even our grandparents probably couldn't even imagine in the Second World War during the Blitz in London, for example. When that suffering starts, I think Biden is very much aware of this. I mean, Biden his administration must be incredibly disappointed in how things are going. And when he looks at the European Union, you know, until that explosion of that pipeline, which of course he did, the idea that the America, I mean, the people are so incredibly naive. You know, I've read articles where people have actually questioned whether, you know, the America, this country of great moral fortitude, will actually do such, you know.
Martin, I'm going to jump in here. We have to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real new stake with RT.
Количество голодающих в Африке вырастет до 100 миллионов человек. Новороссийск, глубоководный порт, находится под санкциями. Основными морскими портами, которые доставляли зерно, в том числе в Африку, были, конечно, украинские порты, в первую очередь Одесса. Сейчас они заминированы.
Il est évident qu'un pays comme le Soudan, un pays comme la Somalie, un pays comme Djibouti, le pays comme certains pays de l'Afrique du Nord, disons, mais qui sont pas au sud du Sahara, mais qui seront affectés.
До полумиллиарда человек в мире могут остаться без хлеба, потому что не будут доступны минеральные удобрения.
свой эффект лавины. Где толстый сохнет, там худой дохнет. Вот это самое происходит с Шри-Ланкой сейчас.
Относительно запрета вывоза этого зерна очень четко ответил наш президент. Любые каналы открыты.
Голод может возникнуть, конечно, потому что это не первый раз в Африке голод, да?
Задача Российской Федерации, как ответственного поставщика продовольствия, эти поставки дружественным странам продолжать.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the home edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Okay, let's go back to Martin. Right before we went to the break, you wanted to finish up your point. Please do.
Well, the point is that things are not happening quickly enough for Biden in Europe. He needs a catastrophe to unfold much, much more quickly. And until that point of where the pipeline was blown up, you had this preposterous situation where the EU was banging on about creating sanctions against Russia, which wasn't even passed, but a number of EU countries still taking gas and oil. So, you know, for Blinken to say, I think yesterday, that this was a great thing and there were opportunities.
Well, you preempted me because that's exactly the question I wanted to ask George. George, the Secretary of State said that the Nord Stream explosions are a tremendous opportunity. I mean, again, this is all their propaganda right now. This is, you know, this is an opportunity for a energy grab to create a very submissive Europe, which I'm never really understood because they lose their productivity. Do you think the Americans are going to sell LNG on the cheap? I doubt it, okay? These are private companies. They're going to gouge all they can because their customers, their newfound customers, are going to be in such desperate need. So, you know, the whole thing about, you know, the European Union was two things. The promise was prosperity and security. They have neither, and the U.S. is making it even worse. George.
Yes, and of course, this was entirely obvious from the beginning, and it was the United States starting back in 2004 with the Orange Revolution, that was going to use Ukraine in order ultimately to diminish and then destroy Russia, and Europe was going to get in the way. And from the start, Europe...
Remember Victoria Nuland's choice words, right?
Yeah, exactly. Europeans continued to follow the American line. And it would have been obvious. It was obvious, you know, here, as soon as they started imposing the mother of all sanctions, that the Europeans were going to suffer because it was the Europeans who were the most dependent on Russian energy, Russian exports. And so now, you know, with clearly the Americans were concerned that with winter coming, there were going to be strong protests in Europe and pressure would grow on Sergeant Shultz to knock it off, come to an agreement with Russia and get that Nord Stream 2 pipeline going. I mean, you know, look, Putin said in Samarkand at the Shanghai Cooperation Organization meeting, hey, you want gas, just turn on the valve and you've got gas. And, you know, I mean, we can see already in the polls in Germany, the Alternative für Deutschland party is rising and they are explicitly saying, hey, turn on Nord Stream 2. So clearly this was the United States was very concerned that pressure is going to grow in Europe to say, to finally, you know, let's talk some sense, get the gas coming. And the Americans stepped in and brought it to an end. So now, you know, the European economy is in a tailspin. And, you know, worst of all, industries are moving out of Germany to the United States. Hey, well, you know, at least we've got some secure energy supplies in the United States. We don't have it anymore in Germany.
Martin, it's interesting that I've constantly phrased this as a NATO's war on Russia, and as George and I have discussed on our podcast, The Gaggle, the Russians are using a new term over the last few weeks, the collective West, okay? But there's another conflict going on here, and it's Western war on Germany. I mean, it's really extraordinary to the lengths that the U.S. will do to batter down Germany. We still have the phrase
phrase, keep the Russians out, the Germans down, and the Americans in. I thought that was a Cold War paradigm. I'd actually survived the Cold War because we're seeing it right now.
Yeah, but I think that it's right that the Americans should fear Germany, because no matter which way things go in the next few months, you know, it's clear that Germany will take more of a role, more of a leading role on behalf of the EU, and also for its own interests. I mean, you know, it's not just about increasing military spending, which, you know, Schulz pulled off. I mean, it was quite something to actually present that to the parliament and get cheered like that, and not to have to face the opprobrium from media of people who would say, well, hang on, you know, we don't really want history to repeat ourselves. We don't want another, you know, military situation that we had in the late 30s. But, you know, there are signs that Germany is developing as a superpower on its own. And I think that the move towards being a bigger military power and then looking for partners, which I've written about in recent articles, you know, Germany has had the nod and the wink from a number of countries who have said, well, look, you know, if you want to do a bit of peacekeeping here and there and you want to invade a few countries in the Middle East, we'll probably support you. You know, we'll go along with that plan. So you've already got an EU army in the making on the German side, not to mention the one I mentioned on the French side. So it's quite normal, I think, that the Americans will look at Germany as a sort of adversary now, as someone that can't be trusted to pull the line. But there's much, much worse to come. Because if France goes ahead, if Macron goes ahead with this new European Communities model of his, you know, this will alienate the Americans and alienate NATO even further. And this idea, this notion, this wet dream that French generals I interviewed in 2008 of an European pillar within NATO will come about. And I can't see anything positive on the American side of that. You know, slowly the credibility of NATO starts to wind down. And, you know, it starts to lose its edge, its power, its influence when it has to refer to Europe on so many of these big decisions. If it doesn't have Europe with it in some of the hotspots around the world, it's going to be quite difficult for it to function. We should never forget that before the Ukraine war started, NATO had a serious credibility problem. It had a real problem with its image around the world. And so Ukraine war and Putin has sort of done it quite a favor, I think. You know, it's managed to pull the wool over the eyes of a lot of people in Europe to say, oh, well, actually, NATO does have a role. You know, but people don't really understand that you can talk the talk so long before, as a military organization, you actually have to walk the walk. You actually have to face people and face bullets and face artillery. And I don't think that's ever going to happen. So in my view, in the longer game, NATO will always have this credibility problem.
Well, I think the outcome of this conflict in Ukraine will be definitive for the future.
It will be end game.
George, it's really interesting. I'm glad Martin brought this all up because we've talked at great length in the past about NATO is basically at the top of the ladder. Okay, it's not the EU and NATO that are parallel. No, it's NATO now is dictating EU policy. And to go back to Martin's point here, who's going to be the top dog of NATO? You know, the Germans would like it. We've talked about what Jordan Schultz has said over the last few weeks. Historically, it's very scary, but it wasn't given much coverage here. Of course, the Americans want to keep it as theirs, and Macron is making a pitch in the absence of Angela Merkel in his own picture. And so here we have, I think that NATO is going to absolve itself very badly in this conflict. It may even shatter it altogether. And the EU is a huge casualty too as well. It's all about who's going to be top dog of this military alliance that should have been dissolved 40 years ago. Go ahead, George.
Well, of course, it wasn't dissolved. And on the contrary, as NATO envisaged itself, that it's going to be a global military alliance, hence all the talk about global. So the idea, roughly speaking, is, as the Americans conceive it, is that, well, there'll be a kind of a division of labor. So we have Europe. You know, we'll have Germany, our loyal deputy marshal, that will be in charge of the military in Europe, while we can then move into Asia and do our containment policy towards China in Asia. The problem that they have is they really don't know how to fight this war in Ukraine, because although you say, hey, if you put all the numbers on paper, you say, wow, look at how strong we are. You got, you know, 30 countries, you add up all the troops and add up all the armaments. We're so strong compared to Russia. Yeah, but you don't have any means of actually fighting a war in Ukraine. I mean, how would this even happen? How would NATO be able to move into Ukraine without essentially Russia, you know, destroying NATO infrastructure, destroying NATO forces, NATO ports, NATO airfields, before they ever even got anywhere near Ukraine, or even if the Americans tried to bring in forces from elsewhere into Ukraine? It can't happen. So this is just simply, you know, like, you know, to use the old phrase, just a paper tiger. You know, you add it all up. Whoa, NATO's a powerful alliance, but how are they going to fight a war?
Yeah, well, Martin, I mean, people have told me very openly and honestly is that at least in the first few months of the conflict, NATO countries sent the junk that they had in the shed outside, you know, that they didn't need anymore. And they've done that. And then we've gotten to the point where, they're passing spending bills to actually build equipment that doesn't even exist yet to be sent there. Oh, maybe next year. Again, it shows the destruction of the pipelines shows that they do not want to have any kind of diplomacy to end the conflict. Their goal is to continue to bleed Russia. And so it's all about, you know, who's got the time. And I've been, over the last 2 weeks, I've asked all of my guests who's got the clocks and who's got the time. And every single one says the Russians have both. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, but the key thing here, though, is that I think there's a real fear amongst EU elites that we're going to run out of time, that we're not going to get through this winter without huge political upheaval, riots, a breakdown in of law and order, and you know some of these governments are going to start toppling. And when a lot of these left-wing governments in Europe topple because of such issues, you know, usually they're replaced by right-wing governments. And then you get this follow-up, you get this momentum of people actually taking power within the European Parliament by right-wing seats as well, which is a massive nightmare for the Federalists in Brussels who are running the show there. You know, so it really is all about time, and I think time is running out, and whether we will actually get to February or March before the whole project starts falling to pieces, because I think EU leaders have really made a massive misjudgment. You know, you look at when it started, you know, it's amazing how Boris Johnson in Britain actually managed to throw his weight behind the Ukraine war in terms of promising money and standing firm with NATO and all that and being the leader. Incredibly, he didn't actually have to face any accountability from the parliament, from the people of Britain. And I've argued, I recently wrote in one of my opinion pieces, that what we need in the West are safety checks, you know, safety catches on huge policy decisions, so that our half-wit leaders who are, if you noticed, are becoming more and more stupid. We're going down.
Exactly what it is. There's no check on this political elite here. That's all the time we have here. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and in Marrakesh, and I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.